Figuring out when people lied came naturally to me and required no effort. Compelling someone to answer my questions was a whole different ballgame. Until a couple of months ago, I didn't even realize I had the power to do it. Picking through Jeff Caldwell's mind was like swimming through a sewer. He fought me every step of the way, his will bucking in panic, threatening to shatter his own mind in self-defense. The trick wasn't getting the information, it was keeping his mind intact enough to stand trial. I'd gotten what I wanted anyway, and when I exited MII's building, a caravan of cop cars had taken off down Capitol Street, an urgent cacophony of sirens demanding right of way. Jeff Caldwell had drained me down to nothing. Driving was an effort. Somehow I made it through Houston's notorious traffic, turned onto the road leading to our house, and almost blew through a stop sign. It was a bad place, too. Delivery trucks had a nasty habit of rolling out this way, as if other cars didn't exist. Nothing rolled out today. I glanced down the access road anyway. A 2-foot-high steel barrier bristling with thick 6-inch-long spikes blocked the street. Judging by the indentations in the pavement, it could be lowered into the ground. If you added some blood and tattered cloth on the spikes, it would fit into any post-apocalyptic movie. The barrier hadn't been here a couple of days ago. The last time 2 trucks collided here must have resulted in some serious lawsuit. I yawned and kept going. Almost home. Almost. I pulled into the lot in front of our warehouse and parked my Mazda minivan between my mother's blue Honda Element and Burns' 2005 Ford Mustang. My cousin's ancient Civic had died a sad death a month ago when the descendants of 2 magical families decided to have words in the college parking lot. Their words involved trying to crush each other with 500-pound decorative rocks from the landscaping display. Unfortunately, their aim turned out to be crap, and they survived. Their families reimbursed us and 5 other car owners for the damages. Now a gunmetal gray Mustang occupied the Civic's former spot. No charges had been filed. In our world, magic was the ultimate power. If you had it, you suddenly found that many rules bent around you. I dragged myself out of the car and punched the code into the security system. The heavy-duty door clicked. I swung it open, stepped inside, and shut it behind me. The familiar office walls, plain beige carpet, and glass panels greeted me. Home. Oh, today was over. Finally, I exhaled and took off my shoes. I had stopped by a client's office before dressing up as a Scottish highwaywoman, so I was still wearing one of my We're Not Poor outfits. I owned 2 expensive suits and 2 matching pairs of heels, and I wore the first when I went to see a client who might be impressed by appearances, and the second when I came to collect the payment. The heels I had to put on today should have been banned as evil torture devices. Someone knocked. Maybe I'd imagined it? Another knock. I turned and checked the monitor. A blonde man stood in front of my door. Short and compact, with a serious face and thoughtful blue eyes, he was in his late 20s. A zipped-up brown leather folder rested in his hands. Cornelius Harrison of House Harrison. A few months ago, Augustine had strong-armed me into looking for Adam Pierce, a lunatic pyrokinetic with the highest magical pedigree. Cornelius had been forced by his family to play the role of Adam's boyhood companion, a role he had detested. Cornelius had helped me in my investigation. His older sister currently ran House Harrison. The Cornelius I remembered was clean-shaven and meticulously dressed. This Cornelius was still well-dressed, but his cheeks were rough with stubble, and an unsettling shadow darkened his eyes, as if he had seen something that disturbed him to the very core and was still reeling from the impact. A little girl stood next to him, carrying a small Sailor Moon backpack.